Hello, friends. Welcome to the Good Cast. Wow. This is episode 9. How awesome is that? We are 9 episodes into this journey. Been hearing so much fun feedback from everyone. So please continue to give us feedback as we explore what the Good Cast is becoming. Today, oh, you're in for a good conversation. I caught up with a friend of mine who is a art teacher to talk about imagination. Imagination. This is such a fun conversation. The lady I spoke to is Jess LeClaire. She is a Archibald finalist, ridiculous artist, but what I appreciate so much about Jess is her openness and her vulnerability to share who she is and what she's discovered with people. So this is going to be fun. This is going to be fun. If you're driving, please pay attention to the roads. But if you are not driving, allow your mind to wander and lean into what she has to say and explore seeing life in a completely different way. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Good Cast. I'm sitting here with Jess LeClaire. Now, Jess is an amazing artist. She's a really good friend. And she's been an Archibald finalist, which is an incredible art award in Australia. And it's honestly such an honor and a privilege to have her on the Good Cast. As I said, we've had conversations through life, but I want to share these things with you guys. Jess teaches art, and she calls it the School of Art and Imagination. Jess, can you walk us through just a little bit? Welcome, firstly, to the Good Cast.
Thank you. I'm just happy to be interviewed by somebody who's more bogan than I am. This is brilliant.
What are you talking about?
I just can't believe you can be kind of American and then totally bogan. It's like you just adapted our lowest form of language. That sounds good. I'm going to real push that hard.
When I moved here, I hung out with some pretty bogan people, surfers from the Gold Coast. So I blame them.
Yeah.
I blame them. And I'm all about, you know, embracing the culture into which I am living.
You're doing a great job of it. So the question was, tell us.
Yeah, the title, I mean, you're an art teacher, but the strange thing about your art school, what I found strange is that it's called the School of Art and Imagination.
Yes.
So it's like, wait, isn't art like, you know, working out what colors to use, working out how to draw the lines, working out shapes, figures, all that kind of stuff. But you're talking about a whole different thing, imagination. What's that about?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's an evolution, I think. I actually started this art school at 17 years old in Sydney by teaching boys how to illustrate who were having trouble in school. It was a little thing I noticed, and I thought, oh, I can teach those crazy boys how to draw pictures of comics and they'll chill out a bit, and I thought they were cool. I really liked teaching boys.
So were these kids you were going to school with?
No, they were just kids at church and kids that were in the community that I was in.
Okay.
And so I started with one class. I advertised in the local paper and I started in a hall at 17 years old. And I just had this amazing moment of watching these boys feel like they belonged. And then as they began to imagine and were able to put that imagination into action, they grew confidence. And the outworkings of that just lit a fire in me that hasn't gone out in 19 years. And, oh, that's going to tell how old I am, because 17 plus 19. But
don't worry, none of my listeners are mathematicians. Yes. It's okay.
Oh, good, good. So it just changed. Then I added girls in high school into that class, and then I added primary kids. And
how many kids were in your first class?
Probably 5. And it was all word of mouth. My art school has been word of mouth for my whole adult life. And it grew to be the largest art school in Western Sydney. And then eventually in Sydney, it got to
Wow.
It was crazy. And I hired in teachers, and it probably got a little bit out of control at that point because I was a baby. I pretended to be 25. I literally lied and said I was 25 when I was 17. And I still tell everyone I'm 25, so I'm just perpetually 25. That's what I. That's where I landed. And, then adults started to come. And my preparation as a 17, 18-year-old was I would figure out what subject to teach the week before, and then I'd read about it for a week so that when I delivered it, I knew enough that it was useful to people.
What made you think at 17 that you could teach art? I mean, how long had you been drawing
until that point? Honestly, I could not draw at that stage. Like, if you look at the drawings, I wasn't good. I was part of a very small farming community where I was a superhero because I was one of the only human beings there. And so you get this amazing feeling in those small communities that you were brilliant. I was very brave because people told me I was, and I believed I was. I did very wild things. I even look back now, and a lot of the decisions I made back then I'm quite afraid of now because I've built fear. But, you know, I honestly believed, this is how well my father built me up as a child, that I was the prettiest human being in the world. And I remember the first day I arrived in Sydney and I walked into a room and there was all these girls there my age who were gorgeous, and I was like, oh, right, good, I'm not. That is how...
So they were 25 as well?
Yeah, yeah. How sheltered I guess I was. Honestly, I do think about that bravery of thinking I had any authority to teach adults, but I did. I thought,
wow,
I'd go to my class. If someone else spent a week reading about that subject, I'd listen to them. So as long as I'd go to my class, which is something I've used my whole time, then I thought I can keep doing it. And so I did.
And your idea then wasn't just to teach them how to draw, it was to teach them how to reimagine. Where did that come from?
I think it was to teach them to know how to heal themselves or to be themselves. And anxiety and stress and fear, it's like I have a radar for it, and I see it, and it was the way I knew how to help people heal. And because I watched it working, I began to try every which way. So I would have a room full of adults, and I would be always peppering and playing with that class to see, how do I help these people relax? How do I help them feel alive? How do I help them tap into their imagination? And if you do that long enough, you begin to see what brings people alive, what helps them drop into their own self. And I think that most people don't even have a clue how to be alone with themselves, let alone do something brave. I think there's a few actions going on in an art class that are really unique. They have to do something brave and vulnerable. They have to create something from nothing that is on nobody else's shoulders except their own, which we don't do very often. There's nothing much we do that is just all on us, a blank piece of paper where we say, what I create is coming out of the inside of me. And as that creativity grows, we start to believe that we are useful and brilliant and kind and fun, and the things that we should know about ourselves but we don't seem to know come alive as we create. And I just watched that over time and I fell in love with it. It became what I wanted to do with my life.
So back when you had that first class and you said that you wanted to help them heal, so your motive was to teach art, but more so almost to bring about a deeper sense of healing within these boys.
Definitely.
And did you sort of start to see that happening?
Yes. I think yes and no. I mean, many, many of these people, it didn't help because they chose to keep living their life however they wanted to, and that's what we do. That's what we all do. But I could see that it was helping, and I actually never was going to be an artist. I didn't have a moment I decided to be. The classes began my art journey, which turned into me becoming a painter. But it came from a relationship with a group of boys that made me think this is a beautiful and useful way to spend my life, my energy.
So with yourself, you know, you said I didn't really even set out to be an artist, but with the classes, you've become a painter. How have you changed? Not just, you know, from 17 to 25, but how have you changed in your life through drawing? Because if you're taking people into this imagination space, how has that actually affected who you are?
Yes.
Sorry, that was an easy question.
It is. It's a good question because to be completely honest, it is a strong possibility that I could become a train wreck of a human being. I have a lot going on inside of me all the time. I feel a lot. I feel like I'm very thin-skinned, and being alone and still drawing or painting has helped me be able to process the person I am and like her. And it taught me how to pray, because the way I was taught to pray was not useful to who I am.
What do you mean by that? It taught you how to pray?
Because I was part of a Christian school that taught me to pray from a place of self-loathe and not being worthy, and to earn my faith. And that made sense to me, terribly, but it made sense, so it's what I did. I always made sure I earned a right to do anything good. Anything I did in my life was a product of something I earned, and it became a foundation for me. Painting and drawing, it's slow. It doesn't have strong outcomes. It doesn't always work. You don't get to show people much at the end. Like, it's not something, you know, it's not something everybody comes and looks at. This, I've done thousands of drawings. It's a time with me on my own, and I'm always sitting there with God, and I began to deconstruct or reconstruct my ideas of how God felt about me and how to pray to him. And a lot of my prayer was nothing.
Like silence?
But I'm drawing, and so it kept me, I guess it was hard enough that it could keep me grounded into that silence. And now that's a really important part of me and of my life, is being able to be in that silence and not have to talk. And I talk a lot as a person. So as that was healing to me, I felt more and more excited to give that to people, with or without faith. I was so excited to teach them how beautiful it is to be alone. And I found often that they had exactly the same experience without understanding that they were sitting there with God, but they would have feelings about forgiveness and feelings about being kind to themselves and feelings that they were amazing, strong, interesting people.
All through drawing.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So out of feelings of forgiveness and wonder and healing, and that come from art.
Yeah, I mean, art is beautifully primitive. It was an idea of God's right at the beginning, I think. So it's not a complicated idea, but it also has a few things going on at once. Like I said before, it's hard enough that it takes our attention. And to take our attention away from the things that are pressing in on us or frustrating us or hurting us, it's hard enough that it takes our attention off that long enough that as we stay away from the things that are causing us to be anxious. And I watched that in a couple of students who are incredibly weighted down in their life because it takes so much effort to do. It's a very hard thing to do. It's one of the hardest thing you'll learn. They say it's harder to learn to draw than it is to learn a language because it pulls you in by using your intellect, but it's slow and it's repetitive and it's silent. It seems to have both things going on. So it takes your attention, but it also stills you. And I think our mind and our hearts are always wanting to bring us home to ourselves. It's just we aren't awake enough to give it that time. So I think essentially I'm saying I'm helping people be alone with themselves.
And helping them wake up to what's inside them, and even if that's darkness, even if that's hurt, if that's pain.
It's often that, yeah. And it's also hilarious. Like a lot of people, like, it sounds terrible and sad and deep, but a lot of people are brilliantly funny and light when they're given half a chance. But yeah, I find so many beautiful people don't understand that they are, because they're just living on this little tiny exterior of themselves. They haven't gone any deeper than breakfast, lunch and dinner, news, gossip, pain. There's just there's a little bit of thin life, and I just think we were made to be much, much deeper and broader and funner and lighter than that. And
do you think that with some of the people that you've had come through, or I guess because you've been doing this for such a long time, would you say that culture in general, that we as humanity in general have lost our ability to be in touch with imagination or be in touch with who we are?
Yes and no. I have lots of like double answers, sorry. Yes,
that's
and
good.
No. I would say in the 19 years, I can't tell if it's because I've gotten better at helping people find their imagination, but I'd say these younger people I'm teaching now are better at imagination than any of the students I've ever taught, and I've taught lots.
So young people?
Mm-hmm. They're more anxious.
Yeah.
Definitely more stressed, more confused. But when given the chance to imagine, because of the sheer amount of information that's just sitting there behind their eyes there and how much they're exposed to, when they're given the chance to imagine, their imaginations are brilliant and way more vast than I ever had at their age. But that does come with pain as well, because I find our high schoolers, it takes a lot of pain to lead them through imagination because they're in a lot of pain and they have no access to deal with that. So I now have a youth worker in our art class for that reason, because it's amazing what it brings up. It didn't used to as much. And I would say when we used to teach the imagination and the art, it was still quite healing. But now what's happening with young people is a lot more alarming than what it used to be. And, you know, that's over a spread of a long time. Yeah, and I can't tell whether that's because I have gotten better at finding out how to bring them to that place fast or whether it's just because they are really hurting more.
Mm. Mm. And what about older people? Do you find that younger people are more in touch with their imagination than the older demographics that you teach?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
That's going to be my answer every time.
That's all
because
right. We're getting deeper.
Yes,
that's good.
Teenagers begin to get fearful, I would say. And I'm very sure of this answer, which is hilarious, but it's just been so long that from about 7 till about 12, their imagination is just so detailed. Like the craziest little tiny example, a little boy named Boaz yesterday who is just so wild. He told me that inside his head he could see a world, and in that world there was aliens who lived behind trees, and one of the aliens named Frederick had a purple dot on his right leg. And he just told me this while I was teaching, but I remember it because I was like, I'm sure he did, you should draw that. And he's like, I'm gonna. And that moment, so that age bracket, they're very okay with the pictures in their mind. Fear begins. So teenagers, they are imaginative, but it takes an effort to tell them it's okay, especially males. It's okay that you have vivid, brilliant thoughts inside of your head and that they're not going to work very well culturally. So that takes a while. But so what's interesting, so from about 12 till about 40, fear. They hate what they do. I'm terrible. I'm not good at this. I'm not natural at this. It all comes back to this self-evaluation of, am I useful in this world based on, can I do something good? They throw their pictures out. They have tantrums. I'm just going to say it, but particularly males. They are very quick to go to, I am useless. But after 40, or if they've been in considerable amount of grief or pain, then their imagination becomes vivid again, which is so interesting. So I have a class of older women on a Tuesday, and they are just not afraid to fail. They're not afraid to be bad at things, and they go to imagination quickly. They're not fearful anymore because they just don't have anything to lose. They're just alive.
Yeah.
And nearly all of that class are women in grief.
Yeah, wow.
And then I find that fascinating because all of a sudden you've got this group of women who should be more fearful, but instead they're not. They're really abandoned and brilliantly imaginative. So that's been my experience. That middle section is a bit trickier. But often people come in, and if they are really good at accessing imagination, sure enough, over time you find out they've been through great pain. And I don't know if there's a way around it. I don't know if the only way to deal with fear is to honestly go through life But imagination definitely helps. It does help people to get to being vulnerable quicker. But yeah.
So with Boaz, I find that fascinating because Boaz is like, there's an alien behind, you know, there's this whole world inside my head, and he's totally okay telling you that.
Mm-hmm.
But then a 17-year-old male is like, I don't need to tell her that. She'd think I'm crazy.
Yeah, well, they just regurgitate. So I've got this idea for a surfboard, and it's a turtle on it. I'm like, good. I feel like you've got more than that. Why a turtle? I don't know. Turtles are really cool. And then the girl will be like, I'm doing a pineapple. So they regurgitate what is cool in order to belong. We're all trying to belong.
Yeah.
It does come back to belonging and tribe. So we try and create a space where there is no boundaries to belonging. Like the wilder and more interesting their thoughts are, the more that we think they're brilliant. And so over time when they realize, oh, my crazy thoughts are totally great in this room, they start to relax. And so some of the boys, I've got a couple of boys who've been with us for a few years now, and they're able to really be crazy with their thoughts. And they don't have to keep them. And it's also explaining. Imagination's not saying this is my decision, this is not who I am. Imagination is just allowing yourself to go deeper than what you know as knowledge. So knowledge is the information given to you. Imagination is the beautiful filter of you. And that's different to knowledge. And both are beautiful. But imagination is saying inside of you, Daniel, is wild fireworks all the time. Just pay attention to them. They're not all things you'll do something with, but just pay attention. And as you begin to pay attention, they are more often and louder, which is why I do think creativity is an exercise. I think people say to me, not everyone can learn art. I always say, that's not my experience. I've never found anyone who couldn't learn to draw.
I love it how you say that.
I just haven't. It's not because I don't know if what I believe. It's just because I literally have not experienced someone who couldn't learn so far. So that's all I have to go off. But someone could stump me eventually. But then people will say to me, all right, well, yes, okay, maybe everyone can learn, but not everybody is creative. That's a gift. And I still think that's wrong as well. I just have never met someone not creative either. There's definitely different expressions of creativity, but we are all creative beings.
What you said a minute ago is something I have never heard spoken to me over my life. There's these crazy sparks going off inside of you, and that's good, that's okay. You know, there's wildness in there and all that kind of, that is so affirming. And, you know, I'm 33, so I'm not 25 like you are.
Yeah.
But I've gone through life, 33, and I've never heard that. I've heard the exaggeration or the importance of knowledge, the importance of understanding and that kind of thing. And so, man, just hearing that shows me how much we miss getting that in our education, getting that as we develop.
Yeah, definitely.
And especially through those years, those hugely formative years of teenager. And so that's crazy. So
can I ask you a question first?
Yeah.
Okay. So my question is, do you think that it is possible to love every human being? Like, do you believe that every human being is worthy of love, I guess, is the question.
Yes.
Because I do too. But... and it's actually, I find, this is my theory, but it's impossible to teach somebody you don't love. So that means I've fallen in love with a lot of human beings. But I think when we allow them to be them and get in touch with that very thing we're talking about, I'm not trying to be ethereal, but we'll get to a whole nother planet. But when we allow them to say, what is going on inside of me is knitted together and brilliant, we are introducing them to Jesus. We are saying, God is living and breathing in you, and you need to get to know you and the greatness going on inside of you to find him. And that is not what I was taught. I was taught the less of me, the more of God. And I'm not talking about selfishness, but I'm talking about believing that my thoughts and my ideas and my eyes that see that leaf fluttering in the wind and find it to be so magical it makes me cry, that is me getting to know myself, and that is beautiful. That's not being narcissistic, and that's not being selfish. That's me finding that what I was made to be is actually a person who finds and sees beauty.
Mm.
But you are too, and so is that person and that person and that person. So finding that in people reminds me that they are worthy of love, and then it's impossible to not feel grace and love for them when I can see that imagination and life in them.
Mm.
So that has been a way that I have learned to love lots of people. There's lots of them I thought, there is no way I can love this person. They are literally pure evil.
Mm.
But over time...
Mm.
And given opportunity to be alive and to be conscious, they're lovely.
Mm. That's so good, because I actually had a guest on a few episodes ago who talked about how we are all made in this image of God. There's this goodness within us. And, you know, he spoke about a lot of the theory of that, but you're actually bringing so much practicality to that. You're bringing this tangible relationships that you've actually had, and you've started going, I don't know how I can love this person, but you've started to see the goodness, you've started to see who they are, and in that you did begin to love.
It is hard to put language to, though, because yeah. I was just saying to you before we started the podcast, like, I'm not educated in this. I am just I have observed it for a long time, and I would love to understand the things I've watched, but I know they're real and I've seen it so many times that I believe it, but I'm not necessarily good yet at explaining. And if it's Brian you're talking about that you interviewed, like me and Brian had a brilliant chat because, and he put words around what I felt about creativity so well. And I wish I could remember how he said it, but at dinner, Brian Zahn talked about creativity and beauty and why it helps heal humanity. And when he said it, I'm like, please just write that down and just put it on somewhere on my wall. But eventually that's the dream, like that I can explain why it's so important better.
Because that's what you're doing. You're providing a space where people are finding healing, people are finding restoration, people are finding a love of themselves. Now, we're going to step back because you said earlier, The less of me and more of him is the narrative that you've believed. And by him, I mean God. Less of me and more of God is the narrative that you've followed throughout a large part of your life. So what caused this transition to say it's okay to love myself as well?
What caused the transition? I mean, watching people has.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can answer that with a moment. Because I taught the exact thing I'm saying, I taught to many people.
What did you teach to people?
Well, as a pastor, I taught people that same idea. I taught them.
And when you taught that, what did you believe that to mean?
I honestly don't think I thought very deep about it. I think I regurgitated a sentence and a line that was said for a long time. Which we shouldn't laugh about.
I don't think
I really thought, hey, you just need more of God. Someone would come to me with a counseling problem.
What does that mean?
P.S. I should never counsel people. That was silly to think that because I'm a pastor, I'm allowed to counsel people. Because my answer was always we just need God around this. And actually some people, it wasn't that they needed God. They needed me to listen to them. But instead I would come to a quick solution of you need more of God. And you are honestly thinking about yourself too much. And then I told myself that same narrative. So I tried to not think about myself. In reflection, that girl that I look back on, she had many brilliant characteristics, but she had no interest in others. I was always trying so hard to deflect away from myself. I had no idea of who I was, so I had nothing to offer people because I didn't even like who I was. I just tried to mimic what I thought was a peaceful and well-earned faith.
Mm.
And it was reflection and seeing some of the relationships over that time that, and I've called people and said sorry, that I didn't just say to them, oh, you're in pain. Yes, pain.
Mm.
Let's sit there and let's talk about that. I always tried to quickly sort them out with an answer that isn't useful. So then they would say to themselves, yes, I am being selfish. I do need more of God. I do need to shut this thing down. And I do not think that helped people. So the reason I pushed further and further into art is it honestly shut me up.
Mm.
And I could see it helping people be in their pain and sort through it themselves and find their way to the next step. Whereas the other way, where I'd tell people what to do with their lives with my very limited experience, I wasn't seeing healing. I was seeing people be very oppressed and very hurt and then do the same to other people. They would mimic the exact same behavior. It was like this just flow on. So I didn't retreat, but I pushed further into art because I could see it being the most useful thing for me to do.
Was that hard for you to be silent when you saw people wrestling with pain?
Yes, still is. Yeah.
Because you want to help?
Yeah, I just want to give them the pill, the solution, the quick answer. Or I want to tell them to stop. I want to quick pain. I feel it with them, and I just want to be like, okay, let's just shut this down quick.
Mm.
Here's the steps.
Mm.
And it's funny, I say in art all the time, you're all here because you want me to give you steps. You want me to tell you how to do art, and I'll give you fake steps that will make you think that I'm holding you through this. But honestly, it doesn't work like that. Art needs to be an expression of you, and the best way around it is to spend long enough in it, and you'll untangle all of my steps. And you'll find your own way and you'll trust yourself and you'll put lines down because you see things and that relationship will be brilliant. Well, it's the same. Everyone's looking for those steps. So same with when I was with people in grief or in pain, I would quickly get them through the steps. I mean, ideally, I would have done the same as I do in art, which is give them some form of safety in an idea or some steps that could possibly work for them, while still allowing them to know that this will take time.
Mm.
And, you know, maybe I'll get there again. But right now, when you're interviewing me in this moment, I know that art is the best use of me not being immature and quick to judge and quick to think I know better.
That's really good. You mentioned before one of the things that as you delved into art, you really learned and transformed your life was prayer. You know, imagination is a part of that. But are there other things that you felt as you have thrown yourself into art have kind of come alive in you?
Yeah. Yes. I have never felt more... what are the words? I think I used to feel that I was in some form of ranking in humanity, and it was a secret ranking, but I would always feel like with every person I was with, I knew where I stood.
Mm.
And the longer that I've been alone with myself and painted, not the less I've thought of myself, that's the wrong wording, but I don't feel like I'm definitely must still have lots of prejudice, but I don't feel prejudice like I have in the last part of my life. I feel more broken, more average, and more in love with myself. I don't know how to explain both at the same time, but more, there's nobody that I'm in front of that I'd feel like...
You need to perform or you need to...
No,
like,
no. And
you're above them or below them.
You know, I'd meet somebody important before and I would feel nervous. I don't feel that anymore. I feel excited to meet people who think brilliantly, but my ranking has definitely changed. And, you know, I know that I can learn from a Boaz. I can learn from him and he feels important to me. I don't think before I have felt that as much, but I feel like a very messy, wild person, and that's a good thing for me. I think before I felt fairly controlled, planned, and like I'd earned some form of authority over people. And I don't feel that authority at all anymore. I'm really glad.
It's freeing, though.
So freeing. And my husband asked me the other day, didn't ask me, he stated, you're the happiest I've ever seen you in your life. And I am. But I fall apart more than I've ever fallen apart either. Like, I'm messier than I've ever been as well, but I am the happiest I've ever been in my life.
Is it maybe you're free with your mess?
Yeah, I have let my mess. I think I turned my mess into something else before. I turned it into a usable byproduct.
Yeah, to strategize with your mess.
Like, quickly, I failed. Here's my new plan. Yeah. Tell people your new plan before you tell them you failed. Now I just go, oh, I failed. The end.
And that's okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's when I listen to somebody else
really good.
Who's like that, I'm like, oh, I like you, because we all are, we're ridiculous and brilliant, and we're both at the same time. You know, those fireworks I'm talking about, they're all going on inside of me all the time. But also at the same time, there's destruction and selfishness, and it is all going on. And I need to learn to say to myself that that's a beautiful part of who I am, and encourage myself in my great decisions to love others, but encourage myself when I fall apart that that's teaching me, and own that crap, own it. That you did it. You did the bad thing, and you were unkind to somebody, or you, whatever that is, as part of my journey, not quickly storing it away in some place as a, I think before I would store it away as there is the failing of a bad person, quickly fix it with a good thing.
Yeah.
Now I don't see
that.
I don't see the bad thing as a bad thing. I kind of see the bad thing I did as just a part of my journey, and I like to lay it out a little bit more and let people see it too.
I knew this conversation was going to be fun. I knew it was. I want to ask a question though, because we get to hang out all the time and I get to hear a lot about imagination, but what about people who are overseas who can't come to your school? How can you help them to get in touch with this imagination, with themselves? I mean, what are there things that they can, like practices they can put in place that can actually help them to see it? Because I mean, I know minds are being blown right now, because it's like, wait a second. It's not just knowledge. I filter things through and this stuff matters. So, okay, now what? And I think so often we hear this stuff, but we don't get some sort of practical, okay, have you considered this? Is there anything that people can kind of start to go a little bit further with?
I mean, there's lots of things. I'm trying to think of something practical that's useful. I guess let's speak to the people sitting right now, listening or standing, whatever you're doing, listening to this podcast. I think for me, the first step to opening the imagination is teaching the eyes to wake up, not the spirit to start with. So I'll explain that. But wherever you're sitting right now, let's say you're looking at a cup or a table, stop telling yourself it's a cup and just see the points of light on it, the little bits of bright white light on it. And then imagine the shapes. Imagine the table that you're drawing it. So we call it mentally drawing. So let's say you're not going to draw ever, but you mentally paint. You begin to look at the person you're looking at and go, oh, that part of their skin has green on it. That's interesting. Their shadow behind their head is purple. So to tune the eyes in to see differently, it's like this switch goes off where you're like, I just have not been looking. I don't look. So when we say that to the eyes, look. And we begin to do that. So I get students to do that all the time. I'll say, when you're driving, describe the colors that you see. So you're not allowed to say green ever again. You have to say,
what?
You have to say the colors you see in that type of green. So let's say we pass 30 green trees. You have to describe the green you're seeing in each one. So it might be a brownish, greenish pink. But then the next tree is like a greenish, bluish gray.
Oh, so good. So it's not like just, they're not just learning different names for green. They're combining all these different mixes. Oh, that's
so then,
good.
So then the example is we say to students, you're not allowed to use the word magenta, aqua.
Yes.
You have to always use primary basic colors, but you have to mix them as you see them.
You're creating it. Yes. Oh, that's good.
So then as you start to do that, so the kids will do it in the car and I make them, all of our four kids can say greenish, bluish, reddish, orange. It's like,
what happens when they hang out with their cousins?
Oh, yes. Or anyone.
Yeah.
What's wrong with your children?
Yeah, what about at school?
Yes.
No, that's magenta. No, it's like pinkish purple, bluish gray.
With a tinge of silver. Yes.
Okay, so get back to
yes,
sorry,
so
sorry,
when
sorry.
You tune your eyes in like that and you start to go, ah, there's always so much going on. It's like it wakens you to, is waken a word? It's like it wakes you up to, your eyes start to wake up and you're like, ah. I'm seeing, waking that idea of seeing up starts to wake up the idea of ideas and thoughts. Even say to yourself before you fall asleep, whatever I dream, I'm just going to dream it. Instead of control of dreams, you know, like the even bad dreams, like just let them happen and then think about them after. And then when you are outside and you start to make up a weird narrative about the ducks in the pond, don't think that's weird.
That's good.
Just let it be. And don't call it bad thoughts or weirdness. Just let it play out sometimes and listen to it. And you will be mad and wild. And it's not all useful. Most of it's just a whole lot of rubbish because we're all little children. I feel like I'm about 8 years old most of the time. But you don't have to make decisions from those things. You're just waking it up all the time and saying, I fully give myself permission that the steam in the shower looks like a, you know, fish in the ocean because I saw it. The steam just did that. Whatever it is, as those eyes begin to wake up, I think it wakes up other consciousness and other deep, brilliant thoughts. The fireworks begin. And then you stop. And so you have to find ways to keep remembering to see differently, which is why we have to be lifelong learners. I don't think it has to be art. Go do something else that makes you be awake and learn and realize that we have capacity to be open to brilliance. Yeah.
I mean, I'm like hearing this stuff about seeing, and I just find it so fascinating that so much of what Jesus talked about, he talked about how there's this opening the eyes of the blind. And it's like, we often just think it's about like, okay, I'm just going to like put my hands over your eyes and you're going to see, but there's this deeper soul seeing. It's good.
Well, he's a carpenter, but everyone else talks about that quick carpenter moment.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I see him doing exactly what I'm doing. I'm just like Jesus because I see him.
You're really like, taking up what would Jesus thing,
yeah.
Seriously.
Look, I just need to explain that because I feel like we stopped there too long. He sculpted chairs and tables, which takes a whole lot of three-dimensional thinking and, you know, imagery and imagination. And he spent a really long time doing that before he had anything to say. And it taught him a lot. And that's the years I'm most fascinated with, is the time he was quiet and alone, making his hands make something from nothing, which taught him how to have those 3 years and the strength to handle it. You know, I often pray to God, like, because I'd love to do more with my art and to keep letting it have a voice, but I often say to him, you know me, if I am going to make this a royal mess, don't let it happen yet. And then I get so frustrated when it doesn't happen yet. But I've prayed it lots of times because I wonder how long and how many years he spent just crafting things with his hands and imagining beautiful thoughts until he was ready to have strong ideas.
Maybe he stopped telling himself he was 25.
Look, I'm coming to terms with it. I am.
Oh, that's really good. Thank you. Thank you for that, because I think that's something that oftentimes when people listen to podcasts, they get this really cool, you know, viewpoint into life, but then it's like, okay, what do I do with that? So that seeing thing is really, really good.
Or making. Like, I think, you know, just go make something.
And that will actually get you and be okay with making that thing, whether it's whatever it is.
Yeah. But we are losing, not losing, but our culture is not spending as long in tactile making. And it is a beautiful thing for our hands to touch soil or to touch wood and to just for our body to be in contact with something and turn it into something or fix something. I met an artist the other day and he repurposes, that's his artistry, he repurposes broken things. I was like, do you? There's so much spiritual gorgeousness in that. And that's what his sculptures are, all repurposed broken things. But it doesn't, I think what I was saying from all this, a lot of people think I'm just so passionate about art, but it is the channel that I use.
Usually.
But art is life. Art is so broad. So I think just finding a way home to ourselves is often in the making, in making something.
Jess, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I loved it.
for chatting with us. And I know that people are going to hear this and are going to begin waking up. It was something that you have hugely influenced in my life. And I thank you for that. And just helping me to see my imagination as totally okay and good.
I think I'm going to finish this podcast crying.
that's okay. That is totally okay.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you. I'm really glad that your voice can be heard and shared. So thanks for hanging out.
Thanks for listening.
And we will talk again because you've got other things coming up. It's going to be good.
See ya.